Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thanks for staying with me. I'm Jim Blasingame, and you're listening to the Small Business Advocate Show, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Michael Stalzman's back with us too, ladies and gentlemen. Michael Stalzman is the research fellow for Employment Policy Institute, and he's here to talk to us about something that you might have heard of, minimum wage. Michael, welcome back to the show.
Hey, good to be here.
It's good to have you back. Michael, I've done it before on the show, but I think it might be appropriate to do it again, and that is to talk a little bit about the origin of minimum wage. I mean, the world somehow trucked along for a few millennia without, maybe you know more history about this than I do, but as far as I know, the world did just fine pretty much without a minimum wage law until around the 1930s. Is that pretty close?
Yeah, that is pretty close. You know, so really what happened is, you know, when the Fair Labor Standards Act was introduced, which is what has established the minimum wage, it used to be sort of a minimum skilled wage. And so you had sort of a minimum wage set maybe for people in maybe manufacturing or mining jobs. But
right.
Over time, the Fair Labor Standards Act was amended, and it's a series of amendments in the 60s basically sort of had the effect of extending the coverage to jobs that we think of minimum wage jobs today, maybe jobs in the service sector, jobs
right.
in restaurants, grocery stores. And so what happened is you had this sort of high water mark in 1968 where it was expanded, and then sort of more people were earning it. It became sort of an unskilled wage instead of
right.
a skilled wage. And the value of the wage was allowed to fall for a number of years after that until you had some no doubt well-intentioned people in Congress decide that that people quote unquote needed a raise.
They needed a living wage. But one thing before that, Michael, in the 1930s, one of the reasons that gave rise to the concept of a minimum wage, folks, there was no altruism involved. This was not something that people thinking they were going to help people. This was pure protectionism. Wasn't it, Michael? I mean, the southern states were opening up garment factories and fabric mills and things like that, and they were taking business away from the Massachusetts and the New England factories because they were paying people less and getting people to work for less down there, and this was nothing more than a protectionist step to make the minimum wage so that the southern states couldn't beat the New England mill clothing mill companies. What do you is that correct, Michael?
Yeah, I believe so. I know that the way we expect economics to work today, it hasn't changed a lot over the last 100 or 200 or ever. And I mean, I think that the idea that, you know, what they were trying to do back then is when you set them, whether it's a minimum skilled wage or a minimum unskilled wage, it still has the effect of excluding people whose skills don't justify that wage. And so the effect
yeah.
back then is going to be a little different than it is now, but I think you still see the same sort of economic effect in play.
Well, the thing about it, what minimum wage began, as far as I'm concerned, the research that I've done and other experts I've talked about, it began as a political football, as a regional protectionism step, and it's still a political football, isn't it, Michael?
Absolutely. I'll tell you what the minimum wage is. It's a great way to get people to the polls, and politicians understand
yeah.
that. When you, especially among independent voters, it polls very well, but it actually polls well across the political spectrum. And I think, as we've discussed before, it's because there's a disconnect between what it's supposed to do and what it actually does. But
it's an ugly and hateful and cynical political tool, because it makes people believe that they're going to benefit from this. And so, as you say, they go to the polls and they vote for these people who propose it. And the truth is, the result is it hurts the people who thought they were going to be helped.
Yeah, I mean, people think that they can sort of go and vote themselves a raise, you know. I mean, who doesn't want to go to the polls and vote for more money? But, I mean, ultimately, the money has to come from somewhere. And if your employer happens to be, you know, a minimum wage employer, that might be a grocery store or a restaurant or whatever, that sort of has really these really thin profit margins, there are going to be consequences, and we can talk about some of the research on that.
But well, I was going to say, there are people who are listening who are going to say, well, wait a minute. You know, how could this be a bad thing? Well, the research proves that it is. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, you know, we've done a study we released very recently here, and it got some a nice write-up in the Wall Street Journal, because we were focusing on sort of the impact on the most vulnerable groups. So we looked at sort of 16 to 24-year-olds without a high school diploma. These are people who a lot of policy folks are concerned about right now. People talk about a lost generation.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked specifically at the racial disparity, and we found that each time you increase the minimum wage by 10%, employment for white young adults falls by 2.5%. Employment for black young adults falls by 6.5%.
Wow.
So the effect is more than twice as large. And, I mean, it's one of the surprising reasons was these young black males were overwhelmingly employed in eating and drinking places in grocery stores. They were overwhelmingly employed in the type of establishment.
Young, less educated in that demographic.
That's right. And so what essentially politicians had done is sort of cut the bottom rung off the career ladder. And then
Michael, you throw in the fact that our graduation rate in America is abysmal. I mean, across the country, the average is less than 3 out of 4 ninth graders finish high school in America. It's something like that.
So, I mean, obviously, I think when you start sort of breaking down the different reasons that sort of some subgroups are affected more than others, sure, you can have a discussion about public schools.
But my point is we're creating more of these kinds of folks, uneducated in that age group. And these employment policies are hampering them having the ability to get a job. So we're creating more inventory that we're not providing us the supply job for.
That's absolutely right, and I think the longer that we continue to do this, I mean, I think people sort of think, well, maybe these jobs will go away for a little while, but they come back. But I think we find out a lot of them don't. I mean, you know, there are, I think,
Hold on to that thought, Michael. I got to take a quick break. Folks, when we come back, I want to talk about why minimum wage is worse today, more dangerous today than it was 10, 20, 30 years ago. 20 after. Stay with us.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.